Monday morning you sure look fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have a snowy episode here for you this week. Week 14 was full of winter weather on the East Coast, including games in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington, Baltimore, cities like Foxborough, New England, and even New York, where the Jets played, were sunny, surprisingly, plenty of snow in the middle of the country, but mid-Atlantic to Midwest area was heavy snow on Sunday. Most of the stuff we're going to go over from the weekend, though, was action from the NFC. Those are our leading stories, with the Saints beating the Panthers on Sunday Night Football, Seahawks and 49ers. Those two games will be in our leading segment. In our second segment, we'll go to Philadelphia that had, it seemed, the worst weather of the day, or maybe you could say the best weather, depending on your perspective. The Eagles, huge game. They get a much-needed victory over the Lions in that one. And then we will shift over to the AFC, talk about the biggest game, I think, of the 1 o'clock AFC matchup between the Bengals and Colts. That was a matchup for the third seed in the playoffs as of right now, although we can discuss perhaps the winner of that one moving up to possibly getting a bye. And then other teams in action from the AFC, the Chargers getting a big win, the Broncos, the Jets, the Dolphins played the Steelers. So a lot of stuff going on there. Then in our third segment, we will go over the crazy ending in Baltimore between the Vikings and Ravens, what Adrian Peterson had to say about Ravens fans. Rob Gronkowski injured again. I'll say how long he's going to be sidelined for. And we'll get into Green Bay as well, getting a much-needed victory for that squad. They're 6-6-1. Can they still make the playoffs? But we will start with the game that ended late last night. New Orleans bounced back in a big way, beating the Carolina Panthers 31-13. Now, this one, you can break it down in many ways. I think a lot of people are going to jump out, and because we're in such a, you know, media frenzy type society where we want to jump to conclusions. And maybe one of the themes of the show today will be don't jump to conclusions. But the conclusion to jump to in this one was the fact that the Saints really pummeled the Carolina Panthers. I think you could really say that based on the final score. At one point, it was 31-6. The Panthers scored a touchdown late in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left to bring it to somewhat respectability. But Drew Brees, 313 yards through the air, 4 touchdown passes. The big thing for me, though, this game was set in the first quarter, and I think I've talked about on the show about kind of back to when we were talking about the Broncos and Chiefs and their matchups. What kind of game was this going to be? Was this going to be a low-scoring game, or was this going to be a high-scoring affair? And would the Panthers be able to win a high-scoring affair? Would the Saints be able to beat win a defensive battle? Well, I think the tone was set when Carolina, on their first two drives, moved the ball well, forced the Saints to go 3-and-out on their first drive, and were leading 6-0. But it was only 6-0. And on both of those drives, the Panthers got into the red zone and failed to convert getting into the end zone. Yes, it was fantastic. You got the Saints to go out 3-and-out on the first drive. You were controlling the clock, controlling the game. You made 2 field goals, all positives. But on a critical third down, I thought, early in the game, early in the second quarter, the Saints were able to convert. It might have been right at the end of the first quarter, actually. The Saints were able to convert on a critical third down. I believe it was 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 10. And from there on, it was really Saints the rest of the way. They scored 3 touchdowns in the second quarter alone. Most touchdowns the Carolina Panthers have given up in the first half all year. Actually, In the prior 12 games, the Panthers combined have only given up 2 offensive touchdowns. In the first half of all the previous 12 games, 2 offensive touchdowns. 3 in the second quarter against the Saints. Marcus Colston was dynamite in this one. He had 9 catches, 125 yards for 2 touchdowns. Jimmy Graham, again, went for 2 touchdowns. He had 1 in the second quarter and then again in the fourth. Drew Brees, I mean, he went over 50,000 yards passing for his career. He's the fastest quarterback to get to that total. 313 yards and 4 touchdowns for him. That, to me, is when this game changed. At the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter, and really towards the end of the first half, when Carolina gave up another touchdown, another passing touchdown to Marcus Colston, it was 14-6. You're still in the game, but Carolina getting the ball at the end of the first half, they've got to know that, okay, we're kicking to New Orleans to start the second half. We need to get some points here. Even if it's another field goal, we need some points or we need to eat up the clock. They were able to do neither of those. So they ended up giving the ball back to the Saints. They went down. They had plenty of time. Went down for another touchdown, and the game was really over at 21-6. I think Carolina came into this game not ready to run the ball as much as they really should have. They had 62 plays on offense, and they only had 23 rushing attempts. That stat is going to be skewed slightly because they were behind in this game for most of the time. I mean, from really 2/3 of the game, they were behind. But I think you have to establish some running game early on and stick to it. I think Carolina got out of what they do best. They want to beat you with their running game and their defense. Keep their defense off the field as much as possible, and then when the defense is on, they're able to, you know, get pressure on Brees because he has to throw the ball a lot and make the Saints chase. Once Carolina has to chase, very similar to Kansas City, once Kansas City has to chase, it's very difficult for them to come back. Carolina is not built to come back and win games. They could come back down 21-6 at halftime. That's not the way their team's built. And if they're going to fall behind like that in a game in the playoffs, they're going to be in trouble. I really like Carolina Panthers squad still. I do. I don't want to bash them too much. 8-game winning streak. They had some really impressive wins. Did anybody really expect them to go into New Orleans in the Superdome and win? I mean, it's questionable. I think if they would have won, plenty of people would have said, yeah, I knew that. But I don't think many people thought they'd win this game. It wasn't a must-win anyway. They're still in great shape to make the playoffs. They have the tiebreaker over the 49ers, so they have the 4 seed still. They have 3 games left, and they'll have another shot at New Orleans. So they have another chance at them, and I think in Carolina, this game is going to be different. So we'll see in 2 weeks. I'm really looking forward to that one. But in 2 weeks, I expect if Carolina is going to win that game, they have to jump out to a 10-0 lead, a 14-0 lead. They have to, not that they'd have to get out to a big lead and hope to hold it, but if they have some success in the first quarter and get points on the board, get into the red zone, they need to be touchdowns, not field goals. That, to me, was the difference in the game and completely changed the way the rest of the game was played. So we had maybe a slight disappointment on Sunday Night Football. On paper, it looked like it was going to be a much closer matchup. But at 4 o'clock, NFC West matchup between the Seahawks and 49ers, it was a dandy. San Francisco edging out Seattle 19-17, only 2 field goals in the second half. It was a halftime score of 16-14, San Francisco leading, and they were able to keep the 2-point lead because both teams made field goals. So I will say, I don't know if I made a prediction on air, but I was telling people all last week that I thought San Francisco would win this game. And I love Seattle. I think Seattle is going to make the Super Bowl. I can't claim that I thought that at the beginning of the year. Actually, you know, I'll have to go back, and I honestly don't remember what my Super Bowl pick was when we had Cooper Allen on the show back in August, early September. So I don't remember where I had Seattle and San Francisco, but I do think at this point in the season, Seattle is the best, clear number one team in the league. And they still are, even with this loss. This is a rivalry game, home for San Francisco, really, in many ways, a must-win for the 49ers. They could have gotten by with a loss, but it was pretty close to as close as you can get to a must-win in Week 14, if you ask me, for a team that's coming into it 8-4. It's as close to a must-win as you're going to get. And they were able to get it. I think that was why I felt like San Francisco would win this game. Seattle has done very well against teams with high-powering offenses, like Drew Brees and the Saints, especially at home against teams like that. On the road, they're not quite as good. They're a little bit more vulnerable, as we've seen. Both their losses are on the road. Two quality opponents, the Colts and now the 49ers. You just never know what you're going to get in a rivalry game like this. That's why I was not going to be surprised at all if San Francisco comes out with the win. So I think it was a really solid game overall, one of the best games I've seen all year. I mean, I love defense, so this to me was a fantastic game. Low scoring, running the ball. I don't think you could really ask for much more. I mean, the quarterbacks struggled at times. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, 15 of 29, 175 yards. Russell Wilson, 15 of 25, 199 yards. Each quarterback was sacked twice and threw for one touchdown and one interception. Wilson's came at the end of the game kind of on a desperation heave. The difference in the game you could really point to is Frank Gore. 17 carries, 110 yards. That's an average of 6.5 yards per carry. And he had that big run of over 50 yards that set up the game-winning score with 26 seconds remaining. Marshawn Lynch, decent game, 20 carries, 72 yards. So I think overall, if you want to look at these 49ers, they are the team, I think, if you wanted to argue for anybody that could go up to Seattle and win. I know they looked really bad in Seattle back in week three. But if it's going to be anybody, I think it could be the 49ers. It just seems like it's coming together for them. Colin Kaepernick, again, through the air, struggled at times. But he has Frank Gore. Kaepernick did a pretty good job of running the ball today. Kendall Hunter spells Gore and has been decent for him this year. And he's got his receiving core coming back. Anquan Boldin was solid, 6 for 93 yards. Michael Crabtree is back and is involved in the offense. Vernon Davis, I think, has caught a touchdown 5 weeks in a row or something like that. It might even be longer than that. He has been dynamite in the red zone. So even though he only went for 21 yards, he had another touchdown. Everything for the 49ers, I think, is coming together. I've been a real fan of them all season. Even if you go back and listen, I might have picked the Seahawks to win the division. But I think San Francisco is a really solid team. I would be surprised if they don't advance deep into the playoffs, into the division round, or even farther into the championship game. I think Seattle's going to be there too. The NFC is going to be really interesting. I'm not going to spend time making predictions on who's going there, but I like Seattle's team. I like San Francisco's team. I like Carolina. To be honest, I still have questions about New Orleans. I want to see how they do in Carolina. Right now, as it stands, New Orleans won't have to go on the road until the championship game if that's in Seattle because they have the 2 seed. That's a huge advantage for New Orleans. In that case, I like New Orleans. But if they have to go on the road, especially back to Seattle, I have my doubts about Drew Brees. I think everyone does with the performance last week. But it's shaping up to be a really good month of December. I mean, it was excellent week 14. Those were the two top games for me. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with some more action from week 14's exciting Sunday. Back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle with your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, you can tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB, and if you are yet to join the Twitter phase, email me, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. I post all kinds of different work on there from Football Nation and other websites. Search Dave's Football News in the Facebook toolbar. We're going to stay in the NFC for just one more game recap. Eagles and Lions in a Snow Bowl in Philadelphia. I recommend checking out Chris Martinick's article, Detroit Lions at Philadelphia Eagles, Five Things That We Learned. I'm not going to mention all five things because I want you to check out the article. But two of them I really liked. Number one, snow games are still fun to watch. And number three on his list, Matt Stafford is not very good in the elements. If you guys missed this game, Stafford by himself fumbled five times and just completed 10 balls on the day out of his 25 attempts, only 148 yards through the air. He didn't throw a pick, but no touchdowns. So he really struggled. I hope you didn't have him on your fantasy team like I did in one league. Luckily, the playoffs don't start till next week in that league for me. Nick Foles, not much better. He finally threw an interception, but he did have a touchdown, 11 of 22, 179 yards. I mean, you can look at the stats and dissect this game and kind of analyze it all you want, but you have to take it mark it off as just it was a snow game, and anybody can win that kind of game on any given day because of the elements. And the Eagles just were better in the elements. I think that's what was really what that number for Chris, the third item on the article, was really saying that the Eagles were better in the elements than the Lions and better than Matt Stafford were. And I had fun watching this game. I was excited to watch this game from the start. It was the best 1 o'clock game on the schedule, although I thought the Bengals and Colts were a good matchup coming into the weekend. I really thought that the Lions and Eagles were going to have a nice shootout there. And it kind of turned into that, a little bit of a shootout, although they struggled in the snow. And if you guys didn't get to watch this game, everybody was going for it on their two-point conversions, which was, let me rephrase that. Everybody, rather than the two teams going for an extra point, they were going for two-point conversions, which really added another element to the game because Detroit was up 14-0 after going for two both times, making one, missing one. And then the Eagles tied it up at 14-14. The Lions scored again, which, by the way, they scored twice on a kickoff return and a punt return by Jeremy Ross. So that is something that was pretty remarkable, that the same guy had a punt return and a kickoff return in the same game in the snowy elements, which was pretty amazing. And then the Lions went for two. There was a false start called on one of the offensive tackles. So then they tried an extra point from the 7-yard line, and it got blocked, which was thought to be a pretty big play because then the Eagles came back, scored a touchdown, tied the game, went for two, converted it, and were up 22-20, and then ended up scoring again but didn't get the two-point conversion. So it was 28-20. The Lions were still within a touchdown and a two-point conversion, but the Eagles did score again. So it didn't end up mattering, but it was just a really interesting game with the strategy of going for two or not going for two. Do I go for two from the 7-yard line or do I try and kick a field goal? There were no field goals to be kicked in this game. I mean, it looked like at times there were 6 inches of snow on the field. That was on the field. I can't imagine what it was like in the stands or on the sidelines, how much snow was piling up. To me, that's the way football should be played. That was awesome. But not everybody likes that. I would love for the Super Bowl to be that way. I know. I say that with a little tongue in cheek. I would like it to be cold at the Super Bowl. 6 inches of snow, maybe not. I mean, if a quarterback like Stafford has a bad game because of the snow, I mean, you hate to have the Super Bowl affected like that. But like this game, it affected this game, so shouldn't it affect the Super Bowl? I guess that's a debate for another time that we've actually had that debate on this show in previous episodes. But one last thing that I want to mention from this game is LeSean McCoy. Again, I don't think you can look at the stats and have them tell you much because of the elements, but LeSean McCoy had 29 carries in this game for 217 yards, set a Philadelphia Eagles record, and had 2 touchdowns. If you had him on your fantasy team for the playoffs, you did pretty well. I think, actually, I have McCoy and Stafford on the same team, so they kind of counterbalanced each other out. McCoy was just dynamite, and he's going to be a key player for the Eagles on their playoff run, do I dare say, when they get to the playoffs. We're still waiting to see if they edge out the Cowboys for the division. It's possible that both of them make it. It's unlikely because the 49ers and Panthers are playing so well, and the Saints and Seahawks aren't going to collapse. But it's possible. The Cowboys, as of this recording, have not played on Monday night yet against the Bears. Moving on now to the AFC, we've covered 6 teams from the NFC. The big game, as I mentioned at the top of the show, was the Bengals and the Colts. Some questionable calls in this one. There were some questionable calls, really, throughout the weekend, called on, in each game. And I think it's the just sidetrack here for a minute about the referees. People have been making a really big deal about it, and to a certain extent, I understand. You know, we want the referees to be professional, to be as good as possible. And we talked about them briefly in the Redskins game about how bad of a call that was. And I thought it was terrible. I thought that was one of the worst calls I've ever seen. Just the way the situation went, where Mike Shanahan thought he had a first down and he didn't. But at the same time, we saw what the replacement refs were last year. Does everybody forget that? Does everybody forget how bad they were and how upset we were when the regular referees were not in there officiating? Maybe some of these referees need to fresh up on the rules or need to go to a class and really learn what a personal foul is. I think still they don't really understand, or at least maybe it's the NFL. It might not be the officials. It might be the NFL wanting them to call the games this way. But I still think that certain referees call certain plays when a receiver is defenseless and he's not, and then when a receiver actually is defenseless and he gets hit, there's no flag. I still think that pass interference on defense is called too often, and it's supposed to be holding, or when a receiver is held, it's not called, which is a big deal because that's an automatic first down, even though it's only a 5-yard penalty. But overall, I still think that these refs are doing as well as they can. And they're human, and that's part of the game, is the human element of officiating. If you ever played sports, you understand that. Sometimes they're going to get it wrong. The best teams are going to overcome bad officiating. Sometimes officiating is so bad that they can't, and you lose a game. Okay? You have to control, I think this is a Bill Walsh quote, you have to learn to just control what you can and move on. If you're actually a good team, you will rebound from a game that was taken from you from a bad call. I know that it stinks. I know it could cost you home field advantage or a first-round bye or a playoff spot even. But the best teams, I mean, there's 16 games. How many plays are there? You know, a season doesn't really come down to just one play. That's my opinion. So I want to stop talking about the referees and hearing about how bad they are, because they could be much, 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 much worse. So anyway, done with the sidetrack. Cincinnati Bengals and the Indianapolis Colts. Cincinnati really dominated this one. It wasn't all that close. Even with the final score being what it was, it really wasn't a very close game. And that final score, 42-28, Cincinnati. I've been saying it all year. I think Cincinnati is the most talented team in the AFC. Are they going to go to the Super Bowl? I doubt it. I think it'd be good for the NFL if they go to the Super Bowl. It would be nice to see a different team in there, although Denver hasn't been there in a while. We've seen Peyton Manning there. So I think it would be good for the state of Ohio and Cincinnati to send the Bengals there. We saw another AFC North team go that hasn't been there in a decade. The Bengals, it's been over 2 decades. So it would be nice to see a fresh team there and perhaps even have them play another team that's never won a Super Bowl in Seattle and have a team by default, that's never won the Super Bowl win it this year. I think that would be nice. That's just my opinion. That is, if my team doesn't make it. So I still think, and this is another game that supports my claim, that Cincinnati has the most talented squad in the AFC. It really is just going to come down to Andy Dalton. And on this day, yesterday that is, Sunday, depending on when you're listening, Andy Dalton had a tremendous day. 24 of 35, 275 yards, 3 touchdowns, wasn't sacked once, and the running game was superb for the Bengals as well. Gio Bernard, 12 carries, 99 yards. That's an average of 8.3 yards per carry. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, not quite as good on the average, 17 carries, 48 yards, but he had the 2 touchdowns. And by the way, Dalton also had a rushing touchdown in this game. So he's spreading it around. People have criticized him in the past, years past, that he was only thrown to A.J. Green. Green had 6 catches, 72 yards in this game, had a touchdown. Marvin Jones had a touchdown, 3 catches, 60 yards. Gio had 4 more catches in this game. He's been dynamite out of the backfield. Jermaine Gresham, the tight end, had a touchdown. Manu Sanu didn't have a touchdown in this game, but he's been involved in the offense. And to me, the strength of this team is on defense. So the Bengals are a team I think you really have to look out for. The question for me is, can they win a playoff game? That's been the question mark for this team for years now. They haven't won a playoff game maybe since 88. I think 1990 was the last time, actually, they won a playoff game. So it's been a while. They've been to the playoffs 2 years in a row now with Dalton. The next step is win a playoff game. And depending on the matchup, you know, if they fall somehow to the 4 seed and play the Chiefs, maybe they won't win a playoff game. But I'm liking the Bengals more and more. The question mark still is, can they play on the road too? That's another question mark. I mentioned Dalton and his play, but also this team is 6-0 on at home, and then only 3-4 on the road. So, but if they're going to win the AFC North, I think they will do that, and they get a home playoff game. Depending on who they play, it might be the Ravens actually, but I think that they will finally get off the snide and win a playoff game, especially if it's home. And it looks like they have earned the third seed in the AFC with this win, beating the Colts, who are the other team leading the division. Actually, they backed their way into a division title on Sunday with the Titans losing. The Colts are the AFC South champs. So Dalton in this one, his stats would probably impress you, but I think most of that was in garbage time, to be honest. At halftime, he didn't have any touchdown passes. He had 4 touchdown passes in the second half. 2 of them were with 10 minutes left in the game, and Cincinnati was leading 35-14, so perhaps letting up a little bit. Luck was 29 of 46, 4 touchdowns. The big thing for me is it seems like they seesaw every other game whether they can run the ball or not. And they didn't even try to run the ball in this game. Trent Richardson, who's no longer starting, had 6 carries for 20 yards. Donald Brown, who supposedly starts, 4 carries, 11 yards. I mean, Andrew Luck had half as many carries as Brown, 2 carries, and he led the team in rushing with 32 yards. So if the Colts are going to win, especially without Reggie Wayne, they got to get the running game going. They have to. I think it's a necessity. So, but to me, the Colts are a team that are really struggling because they don't have Reggie Wayne. They're a team that I don't think is going to go anywhere in the playoffs. They're going to be, honestly, they're going to be one and done. No matter if they play the Ravens or the Chiefs. It looks like they're going to play the Chiefs as they're going to be the 4 seed. I think the Chiefs go into Indianapolis and win. Or if somehow the Colts get back up to the 3 seed, I mean, they'd have to go on a hot streak, and then maybe my opinion will change. But at this point, they're going to play the Chiefs, and I don't think they're capable of beating the Chiefs with that defense playing back to where it was. I'll mention the Chiefs briefly right now. They'd be routed the Redskins 45-10. I think they scored most of those points in the first half as well. It was 38-10 at halftime. So, yeah. And the Redskins didn't even get any yards in garbage time. So really impressive there with the win for the Chiefs. So it's looking like Although, I know it's early, but it's really looking like Chiefs-Colts, and I don't like the Chiefs. Excuse me, I don't like the Colts at all right now. Let's run through some other games from the AFC before we take another break. The Chargers really routed the Giants in this one. The final score of that was 37-14, San Diego. A must win for the Chargers, and the Giants were holding on to playoff life by a thread. I would say they're eliminated now, especially when they're playing Seattle next week. Even though it's at home, I don't expect them to win, so that's going to push them way down the playoff ladder. San Diego's still alive at 6-7. They're up there competing with Baltimore and Miami. We'll get to them in a second. Peyton Manning perhaps put to rest a little bit of doubt about the people talking about how he can't throw in the cold. I was actually, prior to the airing, when I was watching the games on Sunday afternoon, thinking about what I wanted to put in my fourth and long segment, which is coming up, I was going to talk about Peyton Manning and how he struggles in the cold. Well, didn't really seem fair to do that after his performance this week. 39 completions, 59 attempts, 39 completions, 59 attempts, 397 passing yards, 4 touchdowns for the future Hall of Famer. Really an incredible day after the Broncos fell behind in this one, 21-10. Again, they fell behind, which Tony Dungy brought up on Sunday Night Football, that perhaps that could lead to a little bit of, bring you to worry about the Broncos a little bit, the fact that they're falling behind. And that, I guess, is true, but I think it's really promising that the Broncos were able to come back again and Peyton was so effective in the cold weather. Because I really have my doubts about Peyton playing in Denver, especially if they get the home field advantage, him throwing in the cold, because he wasn't able to do it last year against Joe Flacco, and he didn't do all that well, especially in the second half, against Tom Brady and the Patriots. So if he plays Tom Brady, or even plays Joe Flacco and the Ravens again at home in the cold, is he going to be able to do it? I think he put that to rest at least for a week, and we can stop talking about it. That's why it's not going to show up in my fourth and long segment. Moreno and Ball in the backfield were great, almost identical. Moreno, 14 carries, 78 yards. Ball, 15 carries, 77 yards. Both had a rushing touchdown score. Decker, Thomas, and Welker all shared the wealth in receiving as well. All got touchdowns. 8 catches for Decker, 7 for Thomas, 5 for Welker. And throw some love to the kicker. Matt Prater set an NFL record long 64-yard field goal. Pretty impressive, even though it was in Denver. Okay, let's move on to the New York Jets. You know, as much as I want to rip the Jets, and I ripped them really last week, and the fact that their organization, I don't want to say their organization is so bad, but at times have been really bad. I mean, if you look at their point differential, geez, is it lopsided? Let me pull that up real quick. -111. -111. Houston is 2-11, and their point differential is -100. The Jets are worse at point differential than the Houston Texans. Somehow they're 6-7. Somehow they're still alive for a playoff spot. I mean, the AFC is arguably really bad this year, but you know what? I'm going to give the credit to the Jets. They've also beaten some bad teams, but they're beating the teams that they should, losing by a lot to the teams that they should lose to, but they're alive at 6-7. Rex Ryan, I think, has earned the right to keep his job, and Geno Smith even perhaps has earned the right, at least for another week, to keep his job and continue to quarterback the New York Jets. The last game, and another important one, really. I mean, it's sad that it was important because neither one of these teams had a winning record before the game started. But Miami at Pittsburgh was a pretty exciting one, too, with it going back and forth. At times, it really looked like Pittsburgh was going to stay alive and move to 6-7 as well with some of these other teams, the Jets and Chargers. But The Dolphins pulled out the victory 34-28. Charles Clay was huge in this one, had two touchdowns. Troy Polamalu couldn't tackle the guy. Polamalu, I know people have talked about him being overrated. He's had a good season, and he really has, and he had a pick six in this game. So he was outstanding, but he could not tackle Charles Clay, who had six catches for 97 yards and two scores. And the guy has had games where he had nothing, had a catch and 4 yards or something like that. I mean, he's had some really poor performances. And for the Steelers, you can talk about how, you know, the last play should have been a touchdown if Brown doesn't step out of bounds. And yeah, I think that was poor on his part, not knowing where he was on the field. Maybe perhaps pulling a Mike Tomlin, not knowing where he was on the field, except the opposite, where he stepped out of bounds and Tomlin was on the field. Which, by the way, another sidebar here, the NFL has changed their ruling on that, and they're taking away a draft pick from the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's probably going to be a compensation pick, is what is being reported by, and CBS Sports broke this news earlier on Sunday. I'm going to say two things on this. One, I don't understand why the reports initially were they weren't going to take away any draft picks, except for if the Ravens missed the playoffs based on a tiebreaker of points scored, which makes sense, okay? It makes sense, okay, take away a draft pick if the Ravens missed the playoffs because of the play. It's highly unlikely to happen, but it makes sense to do that. Now it's coming out that they're taking away a pick anyway. Why all of a sudden the change in heart? I don't understand that, first of all. And second of all, I don't like that. I mean, this is not just the NFL. This is sports across the board. But they continue to just make up rules as they go. Where does it say that you can take away a draft pick for this punishment? You know, where does it say that you can take away a draft pick for what Bill Belichick did or for what the Saints did? I think, I know that all of them were different cases, and sports and the Commissioner's Office of Professional Sports in baseball and the NFL and all these sports take it by a case-by-case basis. But that leads to contradictions, and to me, this is a contradiction. It really is. I said it last week. I don't want to get into it again. I don't think it's worth taking away a draft pick. Find the team, find Mike Tomlin, maybe even consider suspending him, but don't take away a draft pick. I don't think it's worth that punishment. Even if it's a compensation pick, there's plenty of seventh round players that are turning into Hall of Famers. I mean, Tom Brady was a seventh round pick. Marcus Colston had two touchdowns on Sunday night. He was a seventh round pick. You know, there's good guys to be had late in the draft. And Pittsburgh's going to have one less pick. It's a disadvantage to them. All right, that's enough of that. We've discussed enough of that nonsense. But the near miracle that almost happened with Antonio Brown stepping out of bounds, you can say all you want about how he should have been in bounds and the Steelers should have won that game, although I think Ben's lateral was slightly forward, which nobody on TV, at least I haven't seen anybody on TV, discuss that aspect of the play. The main story to me is Pittsburgh's defense could not stop anybody. Not only could they not tackle Charles Clay, which is amazing to me, Daniel Thomas, 16 carries, 105 yards, and a touchdown. This guy was behind Lamar Miller, who was stinking up the place. Lamar Miller had 6 carries for 20 yards in the game as well. Ryan Tannehill had a run for 48 yards. I mean, they couldn't stop anyone. The Dolphins had 181 yards on the ground. That's just in the snow. You got to expect teams to come in and want to run the ball. You're on your home turf, your home turf if you're the Steelers. You have the advantage that a home, a warm weather team, I'm saying that in quotes, is coming in and is not used to the cold weather, and they run all over you. They have more rushing yards than passing yards. You don't deserve to win. That's why Antonio Brown stepped out of bounds. He didn't deserve it. We're going to take another break here, but there's still some really crazy stuff coming up. Two crazy endings of AFC games in Baltimore and New England, and then Green Bay. Are they still alive for the playoffs? That's coming up in the Fourth and Long segment. Got you on my mind. Back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, your host Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear from the fans. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You can also send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. We actually had a fan email me over the week. Dave, I hope you're still listening to the show, even though you had some disagreements with me over the week, over last week's episode. And I'm really glad that you emailed me because I actually had a fact error on last week's show. I said last week that discussing the New England Patriots and the sanctions that Bill Belichick had with the spying on the St. Louis Rams and other teams' practices, I had that wrong. It was never proven with video evidence that the Patriots had ever spied on another team's practice. They only stole signals from the New York Jets during the game. I believe it was week one of the 2007 season. That's when all of this came out and talking about the Super Bowl stuff. Well, those videotapes were reviewed or never found. What I said last week about them spying on practices was wrong. So actually somebody reported about a reporter from the Boston Herald reported about the videotapes and the Patriots and Bill Belichick spying on the St. Louis Rams in Super Bowl 36, and he nearly lost his job and had to extend an apology in the newspaper to it. So I think that's why I didn't know about the apology or didn't hear about it, because it was in the Boston Herald. To my memory, they didn't ever air that on ESPN or anything. Maybe I missed SportsCenter that day. Maybe they didn't cover it. I don't know. But I was unaware of that fact, but that is indeed true. Dave Wilmoth, again, thank you very much for the email and clearing that up, that the Patriots were never proven to have spied on anyone's practices. They just stole the signals from the New York Jets. Not saying that that's not a small crime, but that was... It's much smaller in the grand scheme of things that they did not steal or spy on teams' practices. I really hope that I don't lose my job at Football Nation over the fact error that I had last week, although I don't get paid by Football Nation. So I think I'm in the clear. Although, Dave, thank you very much for emailing me. And if anybody else would like to email me about a fact error, or hopefully not a fact error, hopefully I'm not having more fact errors, but if you email me, we could have a great discussion like Dave and I had over the last week, and you'll get a shout out here live on the show. So that would be fantastic. Please email me, tweet at me. You'll get your name heard on the air. We're going to the Fourth and Long segment, which will actually feature the New England Patriots. Let's go to them first. They had a crazy comeback, scoring two touchdowns in the last 2 minutes. Actually, I think it was two touchdowns in the last minute of the game to beat the Browns 27-26. And actually, speaking of two-point conversions we were talking about before, Cleveland went for a two-point conversion earlier in the game and missed it. It would have been tied if they just kicked the extra point. Oh, I mean, can it get any worse for Cleveland? They had this game wrapped up and they blew it. But bigger story for New England, Rob Gronkowski left the game with an apparent knee injury. Well, it definitely was a knee injury. It's an apparent ACL tear. So my statement, the New England Patriots Super Bowl hopes are extremely hurt by the Rob Gronkowski injury, and I'm going to have to agree. And Dave, I'm sure, will not like it because I could tell from his emails he's a huge Patriots fan. But I think Gronkowski, his injury is huge for the New England Patriots. They were leading the league in several offensive categories, including points per game when Gronkowski plays. He's such a difference maker with him and his bionic arm. Doesn't that look like a bionic arm? I don't know. That sleeve that he wears on his arm, I can't believe he tore his ACL. I didn't know he had knees. I thought they were bionic. It's going to be a huge, huge injury for them. We saw what they were without him in the Super Bowl against the Giants in 2011. When he played, but he wasn't 100%. So I think this is a huge loss. I'm not saying that the Patriots can't make the Super Bowl or can't go far in the playoffs, but it definitely hurts their chances. Tom Brady, I know by the end of the game he had good stats because he threw two touchdowns late, but he really struggled again against the Browns. He struggled at times last week with, getting off to really slow starts in games now, 3 weeks in a row, really. So I don't really know why that's the case. And I know Tom Brady's aware of the slow starts and is trying to correct it. I mean, the guy works harder than or as hard as anybody in the league. So not really sure what has led to the slow starts. Not going to speculate about that one. But I will say that the injury to Gronkowski will not help Tom Brady get out to and the Patriots get out to faster starts on offense. Going over to Baltimore, my statement there, although we had some crazy, crazy games this weekend, the craziest one was in Baltimore, and I got to agree again. Let's go to that game, okay? The Vikings were leading 12-7 when Dennis Pitta scored a one-yard touchdown pass from Joe Flacco to give the Ravens a 15-12 lead, 2:05 left, game over, right? No. The Vikings come back. Even though Peterson was out of the game, Toby Gerhardt runs for a 49-yard touchdown. Blair Walsh, extra point. 19-15 Vikings. Game over, right? 1:27 left? No. Jacoby Jones, 77-yard kickoff return. Touchdown. Ravens up 22-19. 1:16 left. Game over. No. Cordell Patterson, 79-yard touchdown pass from Matt Cassel. Blair Walsh, extra point. Good. 26-22. Minnesota leads with 45 seconds left. Game over, right? No! Marlon Byrd, 9-yard touchdown pass from Joe Flacco with 4 seconds remaining. The Ravens win 29-26. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. There were 4 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes of the game. 5 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes and 5 seconds. It was incredible, incredible game. I don't even know what else to say. That answers my question. Yes, it was the craziest ending of any game this year, let alone this week, even though we had absolutely crazy games this week. Let's go to the last one. Green Bay gets a much-needed win against Atlanta, winning 22-21. They are now 6-6-1. Aaron Rodgers was questionable for this game, ended up not playing, so they won with the backup. My statement, the Green Bay Packers are going to win the NFC North, all right? I know I went bold with that statement. I was thinking about just going with are still alive for the playoffs, but I'm going bold. The Green Bay Packers are going to win the NFC North. I'm going to agree. I know. I've liked the Lions all season too. But there's something about these Packers. I don't know. And it's something about this week in college and the pros. Something about this season in the college and pros that we're going to see more crazy stuff happen. And I think one of those could be the Packers coming back and winning the NFC North at 9-6-1. Right now, the Lions at 7-6, they would have to lose really just one game. They need to win all three to stay ahead of Detroit, to stay ahead of Green Bay. I don't know what the tie. Well, they won't be tied unless Detroit ends up tying a game. So Detroit's got to win all three if Green Bay wins the rest of their games. And I think Green Bay has a legitimate shot of winning all three of the rest of their games. They play Dallas next week. If Aaron Rodgers plays, that's a potential win. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't play, that changes everything. I don't think they'll make the playoffs. The next week, they're playing the Steelers, which, again, if Aaron Rodgers plays, I think that's a win for Green Bay. And then the last week of the season, Chicago, who might be eliminated at that point, depending on how they do on Monday Night Football. Again, that game has not taken place yet against the Cowboys. So I'm going bold. I know it's crazy, but we've seen a lot of crazy, crazy things happen. So I'm going to say that the Green Bay Packers win the NFC North. I don't think they'll make it in as a wild card. They have to win the division, and they really have a legitimate chance of doing that. And Gladys Louise Tyler agrees with me. She gives you five reasons why she thinks that the Packers are going to make the playoffs in her article. I would check that out. And Doug Tozer, he's a Patriots fan, but don't hate him for that. I don't dislike Patriot fans at all. I'm just making a joke. He had a nice article about the Cleveland Browns and their dramatic comeback. Well, it was the Patriots' dramatic comeback win over the Cleveland Browns. I would check out that article as well. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back and wrap up this week's show.
When the world received the light at the beginning of the day, you will hear me call your name, 'cause I love you more than light, and it will always be this way, as long as I believe in life.
And we're back on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, tweet, email me, find me on Facebook, Dave's Football News. I'm going to leave you with a piece by Tom Pollen. He has a series that he does every week. The bottom 10 teams in the NFL, the race for the number one draft pick, his latest rankings out that don't include this week's games. They include, well, actually, no, they don't. They came out on Thursday, but I believe it came out before the Thursday night matchup, so it does not include Jacksonville and Houston, although Houston lost. We didn't get into discussing that game at all. I didn't think there were many people that wanted to hear about it. But worth mentioning, Gary Kubiak was fired. If you've heard it, I'm sure you have. He was fired last Friday, so Houston is in search of a new head coach. And more than likely, by the time that you're listening to this podcast, it looks like Mike Shanahan will also be out of Washington. The Redskins might be looking for a new coach as well, but that not official yet as of this recording. Last reminders, FN Radio with Bill Enright and Todd DeFries, great 2 hours, especially to help you out with your fantasy teams, every Tuesday and Thursday, 12 to 2. I have a series of articles with Cooper Allen, First and 10 series, it comes out every Friday. I do my power rankings, they come out Wednesday. My NFL 5 stat surprises for each week come out on Tuesday. That'll be out as well. And Tom Pollen and I know it's not on Football Nation, but him and I host a new live sports show. It's called I-80 Sports. It's on MTR Radio. We are on for 2 hours on Wednesday and Friday nights, from 7 to 9 Eastern time. If you're in Central, because you're like Tom and live in Chicago or that area, it is 6 to 8. But 7 to 9 Eastern time, Wednesday and Friday. We talk a lot of NFL, but we talk a lot of sports. So if you're interested in sports, you want a different angle than all these other shows or other mainstream outlets like ESPN. I think NBC Sports has done a great job, but if you want something different, listen to Tom and I. We're a brand new show. We have one show under our belt. We will be on again Wednesday live. Actually, we start at 7:05. First 5 minutes are commercials. But you can listen now at mtrmedia.com and just click on the Listen Now. If you follow one of us on Twitter, there'll be plenty of updates on Twitter about when we're going live. And we also want to hear from you what we should talk about on the show. So plenty to dissect. Don't forget to check out those things in the articles that I referenced on the podcast main page. We will be back next week on Monday morning for another episode of Monday Morning Huddle. But in the meantime, I'm going to try and find some peace in my mind.